Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. A bit of a different programme this week. Obviously, you know we're not in the studio live, but this is a bit of a pre-record. But the reason why, other than the fact that I'm somewhere else and Ryan's somewhere else, so we thought it'd make it a bit more sense, is that I wanted to do a little bit of a special programme. This programme's going to be talking about some of the differences between rallying and rallycross, and from different perspectives, from the guys that are doing World Rallycross, even some of the people who are involved with the media side of Global Rallycross. We've got the legend, that's Bill Wood, who's going to be joining us a little bit later on, and also a couple of bits and pieces that he did with the head of Ford Motorsport over in America, and also a couple of drivers as well. So we'll come back to that anyway a little bit later on. But with regards to news, we obviously always start the programme with a little bit of news, and it's a piece of news which nobody ever wants to read and nobody ever wants to hear, but we have to pass on our sincere condolences to the six people and their family and friends, and of course the crew that were involved in the accident on Rally de Coruña at the weekend. By all accounts, Sergio Sandes, 206, entered a fast right-hander and he went off the road, and I've led lots of reports and everything else. I don't want to speculate on it. I just want to take a moment, really, and just remember, obviously, the Rally family and how we're affected, sadly, yet again. And our thoughts, as I say, from all the Absolute Rally, from Ryan and myself and all the people behind the scenes, our thoughts go out to them. This weekend, we have Rally Australia, of course, and as we record this programme, it's Wednesday afternoon and the news has just broke with regards to Mads Osberg. Unfortunately, you've probably seen the pictures on Twitter and various other social media with regards to his recce car. It looked a very, very nasty little off that he had. And unfortunately, despite the fact that they thought he was going to be able to continue, they've made the decision to pull the entry from Rally Australia, and his seat will be taken by Sebastian Leboeuf. And we wish Sebastian all the very best. He obviously, he's picked up a couple of extra seats moving forward. He's been a very sensible young man, obviously, with his drive on Rally Germany, and obviously the Citroën bosses are going to put quite a lot of faith in him. Speaking of Citroën, and we kind of get to the point in all these news sections where we always have a bit of a Hyundai section, a little bit of, I think it's just more tittle-tattle than anything else, but we love this. We love a little bit of gossip, don't we? With regards to the boys at Hyundai, and with regards to Thierry Neuville, who appears to be on everybody's shopping list to some degree, the team principal at Citroën, Yves Maton, has come out and said, you know, if Thierry was available, we would seriously consider finding a home for him if we could work out a deal. Obviously, he's still under contract, but if he was out of contract or there was a way we could move forward, then perhaps it could be a deal that could be done. Very, very interesting. Obviously, all these things start coming out about now, don't they? But still, there you go. Anyway, a couple of other bits and pieces I wanted to catch you up on. Ryan's obviously not in the studio with me. Ryan is away. Ryan is in South Wales as we speak, testing with the Tuthill Porsche team. And they're basically, I think, probably about a third of the entry on the upcoming Safari Rally. But Ryan's there and he's doing some testing, doing some setup work with the cars and working with some of the drivers as well. He's going to be co-driving that event. But I don't know why I'm bothered telling you this, because I thought I'd give him a quick call before, to be honest with you, and I thought I'd let, forgive the wind, forgive the noise, but he's there and you can almost smell the Porsches. So Ryan Champion, welcome to Absolute Rally.
I'm in sunny Wales, so, and it is very sunny, so I left a foggy Yorkshire and I'm in sunny South Wales at the moment.
So obviously this is one of our special programmes, a bit of a pre-record, because we're both quite busy this week, and we flirted. I've done a little bit on Rallycross, which I'm sure you'll hear a bit later on, but obviously I thought, I seen you were up to a little bit of adventure in South Wales. I thought, we need to get Ryan on. We forget sometimes of your highly expertise test driving and tuition skills. So I thought, other than the fact that we needed to fill content for the programme, so what are we up to down in Walter's Arena, mate?
Well, this is all preparation for the Safari Rally, so the East African Safari Classic Rally, now to give it its official title, which is really in spirit the old Safari Rally, as was a World Championship Rally. Still the same organisers, still a lot of the same people involved, and still many of the same stages as the original Safari. And I'm part of the Tuthill Porsche team again. We've got 12 cars going out to Kenya, which we shoot on Thursday. I'm co-driving one of the cars with one of our customers, Richard Jackson, and we're shaking the car down today, having a test, and I'm doing a bit of setup mileage in the car, and Richard's just getting some miles under his belt again.
I was just about to say, these events now are becoming
more popular doesn't seem to do it justice, but this kind of historic scene that seems to be gathering pace, and obviously with what Richard's done with the Porsches as well, because obviously I think initially these kind of historic endurance events were the ones that kind of welcomed back the period escorts. I seem to remember a few years back being involved with David Sutton, when David Sutton first kind of started moving cars out for the likes of the Lake Beyond Valdegard and people like that, and it just seems to have gathered pace and gathered a lot more interest over the last maybe 3 or 4 years, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Safari particularly, because, you know, a lot of people have sort of such fond memories of the rally being in the WRC. And, I mean, 2 years ago we had the late Beyond Valdegard in the team, we had Stig Blomqvist in the team, we had Fabrizio Pons as a service coordinator, you know, obviously all WRC stars, Karl-Heinz Goldstein, who used to be chief engineer at Toyota Europe, he was the scrutineer. Roland Klein and Colin McMaster were the official photographers. I was sat next to a chap at dinner one night who was co-driving in another Tuttle car, and it turned out he was a guy called Lofty Drew, who did the Safari Rally with Sandro Minari in a Lancia Stratos. So these are all the fantastic stories that come out of even the classic event that we're doing now.
It's, as I say, I think it's a sport, it's a part of our sport which I think We tend to, I don't know, shun is probably the wrong word. I think it's possibly more to do with the fact that everybody always thinks, well, you know, professional drivers, you know, current spec cars and everything else, that's where it's at. But I think this kind of historic scene is almost, it's standalone now, certainly. It's not tagged on the back anymore. And obviously you've got stuff going on the British Historic Championship. Obviously, Francois Delacour came over and drove one of Richard Tuttle's cars. I think it was last year, wasn't it? Prior to obviously being out in the Beastie on Monte Carlo this year. But it definitely seems to be not necessarily a destination for retired rally drivers now. There's definitely a respect, I think, for these events, because these cars, they may look, you know, like yesterday's technology, but in order to compete and finish these events, the amount of work that must go into the preparation, obviously you guys are there today, just take us through what these cars are going to be going through.
Yeah, the cars are fantastic, and yes, they are built to period specification, if you like, but with modern know-how. And modern know-how was brought, for example, the engines on leaps and bounds over what they were in period, which is, you know, why you see the BDA Escorts with what they've got now, 260, 270 horsepower you hear of now, whereas they were nothing, anything like that in period. So the cars are fantastic, and certainly the Porsches that we have in Kenya are no exception. And like you said, there's a lot of good drivers in Historic Rally now. Look at the British Historic Championship. You've got a lot of, you know, relatively young drivers in there fighting at the front with some of the experienced guys. So you've got a real mix of people who've been rallying for years and people who are still relatively young in the rallying career in Kenya. It's very, very different rally, and obviously to what you might expect, whereas a British Historic Rally might be 50 stage miles. In Kenya, we're probably doing, I'd have to check, but probably about 1,500 to 2,000 stage miles. So there's a fairly big difference, and we have stages of up to 100 miles long. And it's, you know, it's a proper endurance event. It's 8 competitive days, and like I said, very much in the spirit of the original Safari.
Forgive my naivety here to some degree on this particular event in its current guise, but with regards to notes and things like that, how does that work on an 8-day rally? Obviously, I'm assuming there's no recce, it is just on maps and stuff like that.
It's all on road books. So the road books issued 48 hours before to basically stop any illegal recce. So literally the organisers just issue the road book, as I said, 48 hours before, so you can check through the road book, you can make amendments to it, but it's like I said, it's all the tulip diagrams in the road book. So that means that nobody gets a chance to recce, and even if you're local, you don't get a chance to practice the stages because you don't know where it's going. Obviously, some sections of the rally have been used year in, year out, and some drivers have knowledge of them, but I would say it's more knowledge of the terrain than actually knowledge of that specific stage, if you like.
And now, from an Anaraki point of view, Bobolata point of view, what is the perfect setup in a Porsche for the Safari Rally?
It's all really about having a good compromise. the suspension has to be, you know, stiff enough that the car still handles. But when people say that the Safari Rally is rough, in places it is incredibly rough. You know, it's literally in the roadbook it might say stop, and that means stop. It means stop. Have a look, select first gear, then decide how you're going to pick your way through the boulders. But then you can be back up to doing 120, 125 miles an hour for, you know, 2 or 3 minutes. It's got everything. So the car really has to be a compromise for very, very fast stuff where it needs to be very, very stable, but then incredibly rough stuff where the suspension needs to cope with it. So, it's all about compromise. And really, it's been fast and consistent that succeeds on the Safari.
I tell you what I'm fascinated by, and obviously we've known each other a long time, and yet obviously we do this program together and everything else, but kind of putting my other hat on almost as a presenter and kind of interviewing you in a strange way. I've known you as a driver. How did you end up actually co-driving on an event like this?
Well, that came about through Tuttle Porsche. That I work on the ice driving program, which is called Below Zero Ice Driving, with Martin Rowe and a chap who regular listeners might remember, Terry Kirby. We work in the winter doing this winter driving program, which anybody can come to, but inherently we end up tutoring and instructing and coaching a lot of our customers, and Richard, one of the customers, just asked me if I'd do Safari with him, and you know, the chance to do something like Safari Rally isn't something I was going to turn down. Yes, I'd love to do it as a driver, but financially that's not likely to happen, so just the chance to go and be involved is fantastic, and fortunately Richard lets me do a bit of the driving as well, which is great.
Happy days. Right, away from that, obviously we're not live this week, so we are pre-recording this 24 hours before normally we would go to air, but have we got any other business? Is there anything else that's caught your eye leading up this week that we'd like to roll into the programme?
Any other business this week? What's caught my eye? Not really yet, that springs to mind right at the minute. All we've got has been in Formula One this week, haven't it? But we'll not turn to the dark side.
No. Perish the thought. But obviously we're preparing for Australia. I've seen some interesting photographs already on Twitter. Funny enough, I've just been talking about this with Brian, my business partner, because we've been involved with M-Sport behind the scenes for many, many years. And I've just seen photographs of the recce cars out in Australia. And I can't remember when I very first got involved with moving those recce cars around, but gee whiz, they've done some air miles.
Yeah, they definitely have. You know, the M-Sport Volvos are still going strong. I think they first started using something like 2002. And they built some new ones. I think some new ones are still going. So, yeah, they've done thousands and thousands of miles. And I'll be doing a few more miles in one of them later on this year, which we'll come to in a later programme, I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll talk about that then. Well, listen, I'm not going to take up any more of your time, mate. And the wind's starting to gather a little bit of pace anyway, so it's getting a little bit windy there. You go back and obviously get back to your day job. We'll catch you up later in the week anyway.
All right, well, Dave, good to speak to you.
Cheers, mate. See you soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion. Every Wednesday, 8 till 9 p.m. UK time. All the latest news, views and gossip from the world of rally. Interviews with the biggest names, plus the best comment and insight from people who know their Find us on Twitter at @absolute_rally and join the debate. Absolute Rally, every Wednesday, 8 till 9 p.m. UK time. Online at Fab Radio International. Absolute Rally.
Brian's always interesting. Forgive the wind noise, that's all I'll say. But as you know, we want to do something a little bit kind of rallycross themed. And I hope you don't mind us kind of indulge me a little bit with this. But I was down at Lyddon Hill last bank holiday weekend, and we were with the legend, that's Andrew Coley. Of course, if you're not familiar with Andrew Coley, he is the voice behind World Rallycross on Eurosport, and also used to do a lot of stage rallying back in the days of the Ancro Championship over here. And he really has kind of a forged ahead now. He's a fantastic commentator. He's got such enthusiasm for the sport, and even he still does some of the European Rally Championship coverage as well, but he's definitely made World Rallycross his home. And I thought he'd be quite a good person to kind of ask about how he interprets kind of rallycross and the growing trend of people switching to rallycross over stage rallying as we know it today. And also a former teammate of mine, and a little bit of a legend. You probably know his brother, but I still know him as James Grint anyway. James Grint, who was a teammate of mine in the British Rally Championship back in 2012, who is now doing the European Rally Championship with the fantastic Albatech team, who of course based up in Scotland. Andy Scott's team, who just seems to have grown and grown and grown this year. But James also gives his thoughts on World Rallycross, European Rallycross, and the state, I suppose, of British Rally Championship and stage rallying as we know it. Without further ado, let's cross over to Lydenhill. Andrew Coley, it's lovely to catch up with you. Many people will recognise your voice, and it's great because you're here at a British Rallycross event, driving an RX150 buggy. You've got a massive big grin, you're all dirty, and you've had fun. Now, you're like me. I've come into Rallycross a bit later, and I've come in from a media side, very similar to yourself. We're rally boys, and Guy's been our guest host, and he used an analogy the other week that Rallycross is a bit like boxing, and I kind of was a bit bemused by that, and I thought, well, I'm going to ask the man behind the World Rallycross, Mike, what his thoughts are of the differences between rallying and rallycross.
Yeah, it's an analogy I've used in commentary a couple of times. I think the difference with rallying is you can plan to do your own event. Compared to rallycross, you can plan to do what you want, but if someone else's plan doesn't match up with that, then you're in all sorts of bother, particularly in turn one as a general rule. So I think everyone, it is a non-contact sport, you know. Particularly recently, Sweden, Canada, Norway, we've had a few races where there's been a bit more contact than maybe there would be in the World Championship, but the guys are going hard at it and they want to win. And, you know, I don't believe that the contact, nobody goes into it to take someone out on purpose. There's just a bit of contact that happens when everybody's trying to break at the last possible second. Somebody gets it wrong. There isn't enough room, you know, for six cars into one, and so there tends to be a bit of contact. And that's the big difference for me, really, is rallying. If you say, I'm going to do my own pace, I'm going to do this, you're on the stage on your own, other than dust, which can affect a rally. To me, you know, you're cool. But with rallycross, it's not all in your own hands.
I think, do you know what, I've got an equal passion. Obviously, I still compete in rallying. I've got a massive passion because I do coverage now for British Rallycross, like yourself. And I think, to some degree, the fact that rallycross has got the name rally in it doesn't help it sometimes, because they're two completely different sports. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think certainly for people that don't know the sport, so the public, when you say rallycross, sometimes they're like, oh, is that in a forest, you know? So you maybe have to explain what it is. I can see where it came from. You know, it comes from the roots of the sport and the fact that people were going, what can we do, you know, on a Sunday afternoon to fill a slot when the horse racing has been cancelled on the telly, which is basically how it came about. We'll take rally cars and we'll race them on a mixture of tarmac and gravel. So you can see how the name evolved. But yeah, likewise, I can see that it would have been called something else, but it's not, is it?
No,
so,
it's not.
So yeah,
but in many ways, if it was just a standalone name, it perhaps would almost get this. We need to almost get away from the comparison, because they are such a completely different sport.
Totally different sport, yeah. Completely different sport. I love the fact that people cross over from one discipline into the other. I think that there are advantages to being a rally driver and to being a racing driver coming into rallycross. And maybe that's where the cross should come in, really, is not about the different surfaces, but it's the different disciplines that can come to it and still be competitive. You see racing drivers come in with brilliant racecraft, but maybe not such amazing car control or ad hoc car control. You know, the rally guys, if it rains and they're on the pre-grid, they'll just throw it at it anyway, because they're used to that in a forest. The grip level's changing and having to improvise the whole time, whereas a racing driver will tend to be like, I want three clicks on the dampers and I want the right tyres, because that's how I like to drive the car. And it's just, you know, they're used to finding a hundredth every single lap, and that's one of the things I find that I struggle with, is I'm like, okay, I'm half a second slower, where is it? You know, I'm sure if I looked at the data I could find it, but that's what racing drivers do. And I love the fact that rallycross takes in both of those disciplines, you know, racing and rallying, can come and have a crack at it.
Now I'm going to ask you for a bit of advice.
Yeah. Best of luck.
Should I come and have a go with this?
Yeah, 100%. It's absolutely mega. We're just after heat two, and I'm out, as you said, in the RX150 buggies, and I've had quite a tough day. I mean, it's poured with rain here overnight. This morning there was thunderstorms and lightning when we went out for free practice, which I thought was quite funny. So I don't know, the rallycross gods were slightly unimpressed. But the 150s are a massive handful. I've done the Larder race recently, which I loved as well. We had a joke lap at the Larder race, which we don't do in this, and I like the element of tactics in
a
joke lap.
Can we explain a little bit, because obviously this is for Absolute Rally, and, sure. And what I'm doing, I'm trying to perhaps educate some of our rally listeners,
introduce them
almost. Don't be scared, people, it's all right, it's only going to be a light introduction, but if we can just get an idea of the joke lap and how that came about.
Basically, lack of overtaking. So, you know, like as in any motorsport, overtaking is hard. When there's only four laps, it's even harder. And then you get to the point where either there isn't any, or to do it, it's got to be really banzai and stupid. So the joke lap is one section of a lap, which in theory should be longer than the standard lap. So an alternative lap that you have to take. So you know, 90% of the course is the same. Normally it's one corner or maybe one chicane, which is off to the side, which each car has to take once in every heat race, the semi-final and the final in the World Championship. So it's great tactically because you have a spotter normally who's got a radio contact with the car, and they will tell you when they think you should take the joker lap. But as the driver as well, obviously you can choose to take it. And sometimes it's the first corner, sometimes it's the last corner. The tactics vary massively according to where the joker lap is.
I had to explain, me and my other half watched it the other night, and your wonderful commentary over it from hell with Guy alongside. No, it was great. And I'm biased. I think your commentary is great because I liken it a bit like myself. This sounds really egotistical saying that, but what I mean is by that is that I'm not a journalist, and I'll never be a journalist. I'm a fan, and you come across like that. And that's what is great about your style of commentary, I think, is that it's not from a journalistic point of view. There's an excitable and there's a genuine excitement. It's not a manufactured excitement, which can antagonise people from time to time.
Yeah, and there, you know, as a commentator, there are some championships you cover which aren't that exciting, and you have to manufacture it. If it's, you know, the lovely thing about rallycross is it's because of the joker lap, there's always a chance of something changing. Think of it as F1's pit stop. You know, in every race, everyone has to joker. They've got to get it right. That, you know, and that can affect the outcome of it. There's the overtaking, which there is some of, but there's a start and a finish, and that's every four laps. So as a commentator, it's an absolute dream, because the most exciting bits to commentate are the start, the finish, and if somebody makes a move. And with the joker lap, there's that possibility through all four laps. So I never have to get overexcited about it, you know, for no reason, because it's genuinely exciting. And as you say, I genuinely love it. I really do enjoy it. It's good fun. It's good. It's good fun to commentate.
I think what I wanted to get across, certainly to our listeners, it almost feels like people have got to choose one or the other, but they don't. It's a bit like I use the analogy when talking about rallycross. It's a bit like fast food. You get your instant hit, whereas rallying can be a bit more gourmet, maybe a three-course meal. That's kind of the difference, but it does ultimately quench that hunger for motorsport.
Yeah, particularly if you like the sideways stuff and a bit of gravel and a bit of sliding about. You know, rallycross and rallying are both very spectacular. Rallying, you'll see the most incredible, beautiful scenery when you're out there. You can be in the middle of nowhere waiting for the cars to come past. Rallycross, we've got some tracks which are in stunning locations, but the action is unbelievable. And a place like here, Lyddon Hill, you can see every single corner from any point on the track. So it's not like going to watch F1, which is great, but you see the cars come past you once, and because of, you know, the way the tracks are, they're such a long way away now. With rallycross, I still feel that you can get up close to the sport, and you can do that with rallying as well, as long as people are spectating safely, obviously, which is a bit of an issue for all motorsport. It's got, you know, just a little note there to the spectators.
Most definitely. Listen, we'll have to get you on the programme, definitely. They'll get you on live, guest host or something like that. You've got to come on to Absolute Rally, surely.
Yeah, thanks, Tony. Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, give us a shout.
Cheers, buddy. See you soon.
See you later.
Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com.
James Grint, welcome to Absolute Rally. We're doing a little bit of a special because we've been talking about rallycross on my rally programme. So you're the man who's done both. Now, Guy Wilkes is our guest host, liking rallycross to boxing, which prompted a lot of things on Twitter and everything else. So I thought, while I'm here, I'm going to talk to a few people that have done both. So what's your opinion of the differences between rallycross and rallying?
Well, they're two very, very different sports. Although the cars look similar, they really are different. It's a different kind of... you get a different kind of adrenaline buzz, actually, from it. So with rallycross, you're kind of... The pressure when you're out in front and you've got six other guys behind you pushing on and trying to basically ram you off the track. That gets your heart pumping in a different way to the rally. I mean, with rallying, it's a real team kind of atmosphere. You're working together with your co-driver to try and be the fastest. And it's when you do well together and things the times are good, then that's, you get kind of like a long burn kind of adrenaline buzz from that. But with the rallycross being such a short, sharp kind of burst of excitement, it's they're two very different things. But I love them both dearly, and I'd love to go back and do a few rallies maybe. But yeah, rallycross is where I'm focused on at the moment.
I was just about to say, is rallycross appears to be more of a destination now for
not necessarily retired rally drivers. I think there was a fear initially with Rallycross that it was where kind of retired rally drivers had gone, obviously. Yeah. Some of the older guys that had come through, but it definitely seems to be now with World Rallycross and obviously Global Rallycross and things like that, guys seem to be looking at it now as far much more of an option as opposed to just somewhere else to go.
Yeah, well, I think so. I mean, from my position, I was in the British Rally Championship, and that was really kind of, you were kind of watching a slow death, really, of the British Rally Channel. It's a great championship with great drivers, but it just didn't have the buzz around it. I don't know if it was the TV or anything like that, but it just didn't have the same kind of growth that Rallycross was showing. And from watching the Rallycross and kind of being a bit of a Rallycross fan, I kind of saw that everything was kind of getting better and Rallycross was really on the up. So for me, it was quite an easy decision. I thought, well, I need to jump across now while I can still learn and get up to that level. And it was kind of a new door opened, and it seemed more kind of lucrative, really, for a driver to do. There was more opportunity in Rallycross and of it being in like the early stage of it growing. So rallying was, yeah, it wasn't really the best place to be.
The big word always in motorsport is budget. Now, obviously, you've had to go and find a budget this year to do European Rallycross. Last year, you've been doing the RX150 buggies, which is relatively manageable for most people to do. Obviously, it's a huge jump from the RX150 buggies up to straight That's to a supercar, yeah. And you've had to go out and find budget. How are those talks gone for you when you're trying to find budget? Because obviously, we were teammates in the British Rally Championship, and you know, you had people helping you there. You did a bit of self-funding and everything else, but this is a bigger jump again, even from what that was back in 2012.
Well, it is. I mean, the budget needed for the World Rallycross, for a World Rallycross spec car is very expensive. But what is better than rallying is if you're trying to get sponsorship and bring sponsors to a rally event, you've got to put them in a minibus, drive them across Wales, walk them a mile into a forest to watch 3 seconds of you going by. Whereas in Rallycross, I can be here entertaining my guests and everything. They can see everything that's going on the track. So from one position, they can see that we can watch a whole lap. And kind of, I'm around more, they can see more. And it's got more of a kind of like a circuit race style of hospitality or level of hospitality.
Do you think it's an easier sell then? I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm trying to say. Yeah, it is an easier sell because you can offer more. And it's kind of got a bit more of a... the showmanship of Rallycross is a bit better than rally, really. Yeah, it's kind of a selfish sport, really, because you get in the car with your co-driver, you go off and have a great time while everyone's kind of stuck at service or in a forest, really. The fun is really being the driver. And again, though, I love it, and I would definitely go and do some more rallying if I could find the budget to do so. But yeah, it's a different thing to sell, and I think the Rallycross at the moment is a much easier sell.
Do you think the fact that Rallycross has got the word rally in it almost does make it difficult for people to kind of comprehend? And what I mean is by that is because I'm involved in Rallycross, and I've been involved in rallying for 20 years, and everybody always says they're a completely different thing, but because they've got the word rally in, everybody automatically kind of merges them together.
But I think you're basically, you're circuit racing in a rally car with a mixed surface. It's not, I think it definitely deserves its... the rally side because of the cars that we're driving. I mean, a World Rallycross car is very similar to a World Rally car now, just with twice the power. But you are in a more kind of closed environment with it. So, I think it does confuse a few people. And I don't think some people that haven't kind of lived through like the 80s buzz of Rallycross, I think they find it a little bit confusing. What actually is it? What's the Joker lap and everything? It's just maybe a little bit hard to follow the point system and everything and how the actual event works. But I think once people are in au fait with the layout of the events, I think it's pretty simple. But it definitely deserves its rally.
So from the point of view, obviously, this is for Absolute Rally, which is mine and Ryan Champion's rally programme. And we've flirted with Rallycross. Ryan has openly admitted that he's still kind of getting his head around it. Obviously, I've got a big passion for it. Do you think Absolute Rally should have a little bit of a Rallycross section? Is that?
I think you'd be mad not to. I think... in terms of level of competition, and it's a very exciting thing to cover, and it's probably an easier thing for you to cover as a radio spec show. So, I think you should definitely cover it, and you would be mad not to.
Well, there you go, everybody. James Grin's telling us we need to cover it, so we'll put it out to the vote anyway. James, it's lovely to see you, mate, and hopefully next time we'll see you back in a car.
Perfect. Thanks a lot, mate. See you later.
Absolute left at wall and absolute king. Absolute.
This is Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion.
Well, this programme's a little bit of a special programme. Obviously, it's a pre-record, as our audience already know, but I keep making reference to Rallycross, and you know, our listeners know that my background is competing in rallying, but my media work is very much in Rallycross, and we had Guy Wilkes, who competed in the World Rally Championship, was a front runner in the Junior World Championship. He was a former British champion, and he's just started competing in World Rallycross, and with the JRM team, with the Mini, which obviously did have a fleeting appearance over in the States with Liam Doran driving it a couple of years back now, I think it was. But we were trying to define the differences between rallying and rallycross. Now, my opinion was rallying is like a three-course gourmet meal, and it serves a purpose. It fills the hunger, whereas rallycross fills the hunger, but it's more fast food.
I never heard it put that way before, but yeah, thinking of it in those terms, you're probably right. But the thing that's happening now with stage rally, and I don't know how much you want to go into this, but some of the disasters that have happened recently have made people really come to grips with this idea of public roads, no control over the crowds, and all the things that are happening in stage rally. And a lot of that stuff is taken away with rallycross, where you can control the crowds, it's easy to see on television, and it's a presentation that can happen in one or two days as opposed to three or four stretched out over a week. So rallycross is growing very fast for a lot of reasons.
I think, you know, when we spoke to Guy, and funnily enough, we're going to have a piece which you very kindly sent over to us from a few months back now with Patrick Sandell, which we'll come back to shortly. But when we asked Guy Wilkes his opinion, and he was obviously, he competed with the likes of Sandell and PG Anderson and those lads in Junior World Championship a few years back now. But he said it's a bit like boxing. He didn't like my analogy of gourmet and fast food. He liked boxing. And the reason why he chose boxing was that with rally you can prepare as a driver for 3 days, and you go out and you do your recce and you pick the stages which you're going to go quickly on and everything else. Whereas with rallycross, the plan changes come the first corner.
Wow. Here in the United States, in global rallycross, it changes radically, dramatically in the first corner. In fact, that was a big problem that they had until a couple of years ago when Red Bull got involved. They used to plan the tracks that it would seem to wipe out everybody on the first corner, and whoever squirted through would win the heat. But they've changed that quite a bit, where they've made the track a little less important. Although this weekend in Los Angeles, they're going back to the crossover jump, but they've made the track a little less important, and the tracks are small. Generally, the way they were laid out, there's only mostly left turns or mostly right turns. There's not a cross section like there is on a stage rally, obviously. But it's a curious thing what's happening, but I really believe that rallycross, for the things I mentioned earlier, the safety aspects, is going to become something a lot bigger and a lot faster than people thought possible. And manufacturers or sponsors just want to have access to eyeballs, to people. And they could get that access largely through television, through social media channels that the drivers and the sport has, and so things are changing the way it used to be. The sponsors come in, they want to find people, and as that grows in the rallycross world as opposed to the stage rally world, it's going to be very different. One of the big issues also that's happening in these safety issues in globally are in national championship events, where the resources are a little less. And in the World Rally Championship, if a zero car goes through and sees that the crowds aren't in safe positions, or there's too many people in the wrong places, they're stacked on top of each other, they'll throw the stage. and drive through to the next stage. So, but they can't do that so easily in a national championship event where they may only have five roads that they run back and forth two or three times. They don't have the resources to throw out a stage and still have a full competition, which again is part of the reason why a lot of people are turning to rallycross as opposed to stage rally.
What I find interesting is that the sport over in America, we had, now you might be able to help me out with this because we had live with us last week. I pronounced the name Alex Cusimo. How close is your pronunciation to Alex's surname? Does that sound about right to you?
That sounds about right, yeah.
I thought so as well, but Ryan and I had a bit of a debate about it because our lovely listeners at Absolute Rally like to point out via Twitter sometimes when I pronounce a surname wrong. So I love them, each and every one of them, but I ask them to give me a break sometimes. I really do. But anyway, we had Alex on, and Alex made a very, very good comment with regards to, and this is specifically to do with the Rally America Championship, is that we forget perhaps sometimes just how new rallying is to the American market. It's still a relatively new sport. Now, where I'm slightly concerned, listening to obviously what Alex said last week and obviously what you're saying this week as well, is that it's a new sport that could actually be on the decline already due to all the things that we've just been speaking about, and also due to the involvement of all the manufacturers that seem to be involved with Rally America, or certainly the major ones being Subaru, are also going global rallycross. Now, is that going to be to the detriment of a newish sport, which, on all intents and purposes, we thought was perhaps growing?
Well, first let me say that rallying in the United States is not nearly as old as it is in Europe, but it's the only continuous series since 1973. That's more than 40 years of continuous activity. And I don't think that people in the rally world, everything that's more than four stages old is history. So they need to promote that a little more and understand that this has been around a while. Now, the part of the problem in what's happening in rallying in the United States is the administration and the breakdown in communication between the administration and the organizers. The organizers have all the say because it's not really a national championship. There's a collection of individual rallies that come together into a national championship. But if administrators decide we want to hold an event in May instead of holding this event in June, they're out of luck. They have to go with whatever the local organizers have. Now, that's a major problem. That's our problem, and we're going to overcome it, hopefully. But the thing that is happening with rallycross and why it's becoming popular here in the United States and why the manufacturers are going there instead of the stage rally is that it translates so much better to television. And that's what they want to see. They want to see, number one, the saturation, the penetration into social media, and they want to see, number two, television. And the actual event is kind of down the list a little bit. Once you have social media and television, if you could have a nice weekend where people could go and wander around and see and be seen and have a good time, then that's probably third on the list. The actual competition and the championship and so forth, that's maybe fourth or five on the list of things that are important about rallycross here in the United States.
I think moving forward, I think what I'm fascinated to learn, this is a bit of an experiment for me doing, because what I feel, and I said this a couple of weeks ago on our program, that rallycross and rallying, the problem lies simply because rallycross has got the name rally in it. Now, I think if it had its own standalone name, the conversation perhaps wouldn't be as constant of it's either or. I think it would almost be a standalone sport. But the fact it's got rally in its name, I think to some degree perhaps can go against it sometimes. Would you agree with that?
I don't know. I think that here in the United States, the idea of hand-to-hand combat and or fender-to-fender combat is what people respond to. You've got a huge backlog of experience in rallycross in the UK and in Europe. They don't have that here. It's only about, what, 5 or 6 years old here. So it's growing. And a lot of the attraction of the sport is through the names that are in the sport. We tend to respond to names a little more. So even if they call it dog sled race, dog sled cross, if you had Ken Block and Tanner Faust and Scott Speed and Brian Deegan and these names, Travis Pastrana, if you had these names in the sport, then people would respond to it if it was dog sled cross versus rallycross. And that's part of the problem that happened in stage rally here was Travis Pastrana and Ken Block were involved in it. Dave Mira, these were massive names in action sports here in the United States. And they were in stage rally for several years. Travis won 4 consecutive championships. And when they left, people left with them. They didn't build the sport. And that's going to be a problem with rallycross here, no matter how popular it is. If they don't have a way for people to come in and build new stars, like Austin Dine is a new name. Nelson Piquet Jr. is huge globally, but is a growing name here in the United States. Unless they have a way for these names to grow here in the United States, the sport's going to disappear again once the names leave. They're selling the names instead of the sport.
Do you feel that perhaps the guys in global, and obviously we'll just obviously you've just mentioned the likes of Nelson Piquet Jr., obviously you've got, you know, guys like Patrick Sandella, and you've got Andreas Backlund, obviously Liam goes over and does bits and pieces as well as his global rallycross program, obviously Ken Block, Scott Speed, Brian Deegan, Tanner Faust, we could go on and on and on. Do you feel that it's almost a breeding ground's the wrong word, but If global rallycross is kind of, I feel it's a little bit tongue in cheek, because we all know it's not global. World rallycross is global, and would the preferred destination be world rallycross for these guys? And if it was, as you say, very very quickly, global rallycross becomes the American rallycross championship.
I think you're right. I like the world rallycross show a lot better. There's more heats. The guys, there's more emphasis on competition as opposed to fender banging. I just think that there is more to gain out of a weekend show at a World Rallycross event than at a Global Rallycross event. If World Rallycross came to the United States, they're already in Canada, so they're already in North America. But if they came to the United States, I think global rallycross would have a hard time knocking it off. But there's still the issue of the names, and Americans respond to the stars. Ken Block, Travis Pastrana, Tanner Faust, Scott Speed, the usual suspects. From what I hear, and this is on my side of the water, the sponsors are changing what they want. They want to have social media access so that if you have access to 50,000 or 1 million people, whatever it is, you can talk to them anytime you want to, as opposed to waiting for a TV show to come on or asking somebody to go somewhere and download something on demand. So that obviously the national championships can't do that. So, yes, the big events, the WRC, is going to be events as opposed to necessarily a competition, if you know what I mean. It's going to be an event, an act, something to bring a lot of people there who may not know anything about the sport, but they're going to like being at this event for the weekend, and they can enjoy themselves.
Well, as I say, I think what you've just picked up on there is quite interesting. You mentioned likes of Asia Pacific and Middle East and places like that. They're obviously FIA supported championships, and you know, even the African Championship as well. We had an African champion on with us last week. Ironically, a gentleman from my part of the world, in the UK, in Yorkshire, from Yorkshire, and he's just won as a co-driver, just won an African FIA Championship. And I think the FIA events definitely have some strength. You know, you mentioned Asia Pacific. Asia Pacific is a long-running championship, but the entry numbers on it are actually not that strong. But I think the fact that it's an FIA championship means it runs. I think if it didn't have FIA status, I would question whether some of those Asia Pacific rounds would actually run.
Yeah, but you're probably right.
But moving forward, you've very kindly sent over some bits and pieces from it was the launch of Global Rallycross this year, and I listened to, obviously, your bits and pieces, and you very kindly allowed us to use it. Now, we're going to have Patrick Sandell talking about, obviously, his involvement coming into the sport coming up, and also we're going to have a really, really interesting conversation with Scott Denby. Now, Scott Denby is the head of Ford Racing over in America, and I'll let you do the introduction to that anyway, but it was a fascinating listen, and I hope the people who are going to listen to our show, listen to our podcast, will pick up upon this as well. It's very interesting perspective to hear it from kind of the head of Ford and how they perceive Rallycross to be.
Scott Denby is a very candid guy, and we've had some nice conversations in the middle of the woods in Missouri or at a champagne and crumpets event in the harbor here in Los Angeles. So I think what's happened is that Ford, their job is to sell cars and not sell motorsports. Ford wants to sell a Fiesta or a Focus and a Mustang. Those are the three cars that it's pushing, probably in that order. And it happens that the things that Scott Denby supported, rallycross and drifting, are the things that began to grow. And Ford has come into this thing wholeheartedly, and a lot of their NASCAR involvement has, I don't say diminished, but it hasn't had the success and the cachet of all the Fiestas winning all the rallycross things that it could find. Excuse me. So you'll hear from Scott tell you a lot about the strength of the program and why it is strong, because, again, their interest is in selling a car and not selling a sport.
Fantastic. Well, Bill, thank you for allowing us to use that anyway. And as I say, we're going to have that coming up very, very shortly, everyone. But Bill Wood, thanks for joining us, and we'll catch up with you very soon.
Hope to see you again, partner. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, it was great to have Bill on, and what Bill very kindly did. Bill was at the Global Rallycross PR Day a couple of months back now, but I thought some of the comments by Patrick Sandell, who's obviously we all know from Junior World Championship and the World Rally Championship, and also Scott Denby, the head of Ford Race, I thought they had some really valid points with regards to what's going on in Rallycross at the moment. So Bill very kindly let us use these bits and pieces, and over to Bill Wood.
Patrick Sandell, congratulations. This is a big step in going to an IndyCar winner who won the Indy 500. Now you're driving for Brian Herta Motorsports.
Yeah, no, it's a great opportunity, and with their racing background, that is so good and so great, and with my rally background, we put together a fantastic team, and that is what Rallycross is all about, so I'm super excited.
Does that mean that Patrick Sandell might be in the Indy 500 one year?
I don't think so. We had a good Swedish guy winning it back in the days, Kenny Breck, and that's not my plan, but if Brian asked me if I want to drive a car, I think I would do it, because I think you only have to turn left two times, and I think I can do that.
You can figure that. All my IndyCar friends will love that. Patrick Sandell, what are you bringing to the team? You bring a lot of experience from stage rally as well as rallycross. Are they listening to you?
Yeah, no, we are very in the beginning of everything, but we will start testing soon, and then, as I said, when we bring those two worlds together, like, I know the dirt side of it, and I also kind of know rallycross now after two seasons, and they know pure racing, and I think that when we put that together, that will be a really strong team.
How much support is Ford giving you? I saw you talking to one of the Ford
sponsors.
Yeah.
Is Ford big in the program?
Ford is actually, it's absolutely a part of the program, and I'm still driving a Ford, but this time it's not built by OMSC, it's built by M Sport that are building the cars for WRC. So this car will fit more the style of driving I'm used to, because I'm used to drive the rally cars, and this is actually a stage rally car they have converted into a rallycross car. So I
that doesn't work all the time. Are you concerned that it might not, stage rally cars for some reason don't convert easily?
No. I'm 100% sure it will work out really good, and you just have to be smart about it, and you have to drive it clean, because the limits right now are the tires, and the tires do not really allow you to drift and get speed out, so you have to drive very clean. So no, I think we will succeed.
That was part of the success that Kenny Brack had when he came here early in the rallycross here in the United States. He was very clean, he was used to walls, he was used to getting speed and consistent speed. Is that something you could bring to this program?
Hopefully, yeah, that's what I'm aiming for.
You won last year in D.C., Washington, D.C., Patrick Sandell. That, until you get that first win, you don't know.
No.
You got that first win. Does that give you a little more confidence?
Yeah, definitely. I know what I need to do to be able to put together wins like that. And rallycross is all about the details. If you take stage rally, you drive for 3 days, that's more about finding a rhythm. But rallycross is all about the small details all the time, and it took some time for me to figure it out, but now it feels really good.
I had a guy here in the United States, John Buffum, put this in my head. He's an 11-time champion. I don't know if you know the name, but he says that he would rather do 1,000 corners once than 4 corners 1,000 times. Do you have that same kind of attitude about circuit racing?
Yes, I would say so.
And that's all you're going to say on that?
Yeah. That's my final answer.
Patrick, thanks, partner.
Scott Denby is the Marketing and Strategy Development Manager at Ford Racing. This is a great conversation. Gives you an idea of what Ford goes through to bring rallycross here to the United States. And we talked a little bit about the World Rallycross Championship and Ford's involvement there. Scott Denby, Ford Racing. Scott Denby, it's good to talk to you here in the brilliant sunshine and the pavement and the nice atmosphere, as opposed to the dark of night and mud and snow and rain and all the other stuff that we normally have, freezing cold in Michigan, that we normally have at a stage rally.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to get out every once in a while. It just seems like forever since we've been racing. I mean, all the way back to November, and it's April now, and we have to wait another month, but we're chomping at the bit. We're ready to go. Want to defend the championship, and want to get at it.
I can't think of any other way to ask this question, except that Ford, you've got great product. You've got a good relationship with Andreas. Andreas is probably the pony at the bottom of the pile in American Rallycross. But the other pony at the bottom of the pile is you and Ford. You guys have made this possible.
Yeah, I mean, you've been there since day one, and we're really proud of that. It's something that... you know, we've had a lot of partners along the way in this, and we've had some steadfast partners like Andreas, and obviously with Ken and what he's been doing with Global Rallycross and Hoonigan Racing Division. And so, you know, there's a nice little fact that we're proud of back in the office, is the fact there hasn't been a GRC race with at least one Ford on the podium. And you know, it's really kind of special when you can have that kind of success over such a long duration that, you know, it's something that we want to keep rolling in 2015.
Does that success make your continued involvement, and this is kind of a softball question, but you've had a return on investment, a good return on investment, to have people see that the Ford Fiesta is a performance car in addition to being an economy car?
Well, I mean, the great thing about Ford Performance is the fact that we offer everything from a Fiesta ST to a Mustang GT350 to a Raptor to a GT supercar. So, I mean, there isn't another manufacturer that offers a breadth of performance that Ford does. And so every one of those little niches of performance, we try to find a way to feed. And for ST and RS, you know, we got Focus RS coming. And so with those two products, this is the right place for us. It's the right customer. It's the right cars. And, you know, it just works.
Scott Denby, Ford Racing. Chip Ganassi coming on board. Curiously, it happened right after Ford got involved with his IMSA program. Did that was that a natural progression of your partnership with him to bring him involved, or did he come to you and say, hey, can I be involved in that too?
Well, I really think it's more of a testament to what Colin and the guys over here at Red Bull GRC have done. I mean, they've really looked at this as an independent platform to what they're going to do, and they're evaluating it based on the platform and what it brings. And obviously the level of competition has gone up over the last 4 years. I mean, you've got every manufacturer winning races last year, and so I think you see the gravity of what's going on here at Red Bull GRC, you know, Red Bull being involved, all of the other sponsors involved, the other manufacturers, the fact that, you know, everybody's having success in any given weekend. And, you know, Chip's a competitor. That whole organization, they have success in whatever they do, and they see this as a way to round out their motorsports program and, you know, hopefully have a little bit more success.
Ford Fiestas they have a strong presence in the FIA World Rallycross Championship, but they're not. That series is not here in the United States. Would you like to see that series here in the United States, even though Global Rallycross, their main footprint is here in the United States?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, that's an interesting question, and I think if you look at it a little bit differently, if the FIA World Rallycross Championship ends up coming to the United States, in some ways it's validation of what we've got going on here in Red Bull Global Rallycross. And, you know, so I think that there's room. I think that would be a good thing for rallycross as a sport. And I think at the end of the day, you know, more competition is better. And because I think if you had them come over, you'd have a lot of guys that are chomping at the bit to start going back and forth. And, you know, that just raises the level of interest in the sport as a whole. So we would see it as a positive.
How many times have you rehearsed that answer?
Well, you know, I think, you know, there's a lot of people looking at it. And a lot of people are looking at it because it delivers the right audience, right? It delivers an audience that is so elusive, that is challenging to get.
Yeah, millennials are what IndyCar and NASCAR and IMSA are all looking for.
I mean, they're the biggest generation. They're the future of the car industry. And so, I mean, we're very focused on that group as well. And so you've got, you know, race teams that are looking to kind of round out what they're doing. And so this place is, you know, Red Bull Global Rallycross is a natural for them to take a look at. So, you know, it's just a testament to, you know, what the series has built. It's a testament to, you know, the success that we as manufacturers and the teams and the sponsors have kind of all worked together to grow over time. And that's, you know, that's one of the really great things about the sport. It's very collaborative. You know, we have conversations with Subaru, we have conversations with Volkswagen about how do we make this better, right? Because we know at the end of the day, if we're working it's in some ways together to push it along, it's going to help accelerate that pace. Now, we want to win every time we go up against each other on the racetrack, but that's natural. But I mean, if we can work together to push it along, you know, everybody benefits.
Another delicate question, Scott Denby, Ford Racing. You have a big footprint here in Global Rallycross. Global Rallycross is not global. The World Rallycross Champion, are you satisfied with the progress that you're making in a market where you're strong and maybe where you sell most of your cars? Are you satisfied to be here and have the presence here in the United States versus spending a lot of money to go to Barcelona or Helsinki or any of the other places the world championship goes?
Well, you know, we've got, you know, Andreas and his team are going to be fielding cars in the world championship this year. But, you know, if you take a step back.
With some very good drivers.
And if you take a step back and look at it, you know, the content that comes out of it is global. So whether or not it happens in Los Angeles, the people in the UK are consuming it. I mean, if we do something with, it doesn't matter whether we do something with Ken or Yoni. I mean, the content that comes out of it is universally consumed across the globe. And, you know, the stuff that we do from our social platforms, you know, some of the most engaged content that we have is rallycross content. And it doesn't
really.
Yeah, it doesn't matter whether or not it's happening in Barcelona or whether or not it's, you know, which they're going to have the new event this year, whether or not it's happening in Sweden or Long Beach or Detroit. I mean, the content is compelling, and you've got people like Ken Block who has a global footprint. You've got people like Olsbergs, which has a really strong footprint in Europe, and Yoni, and all of the drivers that we've got. You know, you look at more what you can do with that content and what you can do with what's going on in the sport, and show it to the broadest number of people possible. So really where it happens is to some degree less important.
So Absolute Rally fans, that's kind of rallycross versus rallying. Is it really a competition? I don't know. This program, by the way, was inspired by Guy Wilkes.
So thanks, Guy. If you go back to our program that we made on the 19th of August, if you look out for that program, look towards the end of the program, and he makes a great comparison, which I think I made reference to when I was talking to Bill. Search that out. Guy's always good value. But I hope you enjoyed the program. I hope you're okay with us talking about rallycross. We're still a little bit unsure. Still kind of feels a little bit awkward whether we can actually make reference to it or not. So by all means, tweet us in. Let us know. @absolute_rally. Let us know what you thought about. But I hope you enjoyed the program. We will be back live next week, both Ryan and myself, and hopefully some guests from Rally Australia. Best of luck to everybody out there, and we'll catch you soon. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. Good night.